Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to our latest episode of the Europeans podcast. Arguably the most bizarre podcast out there about Europe due to our ban on any mention of the Brexit word. Oh, I just said it.
Yeah, well done.
I mean the B word. We try to shine a light on stories from across the continent that are overshadowed by Brexit and the larger-than-life dramas that are happening the other side of the Atlantic. I am Dominic Kramer, an opera singer in Amsterdam, and my co-host is the Paris-based reporter, Katie Lee, who is on the other end of the Skype line. Hello, Katie.
Hello. I'm not actually in Paris. I'm in London again because I've been here for our friend Eleanor's birthday. Latest in a series of hangovers I've had this week. I don't really normally go out anymore, Dominic, because I'm old. This week, I just want to put this out there. I have had three hangovers. Two of them, it is contributors to this podcast who are to blame for them. And I'm not going to name names, but one of them speaks Luxembourgish and the other one is an expert on Kosovo. Make of that what you will.
Katie, this is not something to show off about. We're setting a bad example. I mean, you are.
This podcast absolutely does not condone binge drinking.
I've been much more responsible. I haven't touched a drop of alcohol because I've been stuck inside theatres.
Clowning around,
quite literally this week. I'm really sorry for giving you the fright of your life by sending you that photo of me in full clown makeup.
I think you should post it on our Instagram just so that everyone else could be terrified by it as well.
I will as soon as the embargo is lifted, yeah.
Oh, what? Because you're not actually performing it yet. Was that just rehearsals?
Yeah, it was just rehearsals. So when it opens next Thursday, which everyone should come and see if you're in Amsterdam, Trouble in Tahiti by Dutch National Opera at the Meervaart. It's going to be amazing. And I am getting over my childhood phobia of clowns by being one.
Why are there clowns in Tahiti?
Oh, it's not set in Tahiti. One of the characters goes to a film called Trouble in Tahiti, like a rubbish racist film. And she describes it.
I love how all of your operas are like, the Dutch theatre scene is quite, you know, adventurous. So they always seem to take these operas and set it in weird situations like, you're all clowns. Or there was that one where you all had to be like really ill people on a Scottish island for some reason.
Oh yeah, that was Ariadante a few years ago. Yeah.
Didn't make any sense in the 70s. Very strange.
It did make all of the sense if you came to see it. And this one actually is not being set in a weird way. It's just that we're clowns.
Okay. Makes complete sense. Anyway, we've got a kind of mini episode this week, listeners, because Dominic keeps singing, but he's been a little bit busy, which means we've cut back a little bit. We only have one interview for you, but it is a very, very good one. It's the legendary Susie Menkes. She is the international editor of Vogue magazine, and she's been writing for fashion for half a century. She is an institution in her own right, and I rang her up to talk about Givenchy this week, the French fashion designer who died this week at the age of 91. The Frenchest of all French designers, as Paris Match magazine put it. And we basically wanted to hear from someone who knew him and knew what made his design so special. So I'm going to be talking to Susie a little bit later. But first of all, we have our regular feature back for you. It's Good Week, Bad Week.
Let's start with Good Week. Who's it been a good week for, Katie?
It's been a very good week for Belgian monks who have won their battle with a Dutch supermarket chain. We're going over to Western Belgium, Dominic, to West Vlieteren, St. Sixtus Abbey.
Sorry, where?
West Vlieteren. I don't know. My Flemish accent isn't spot on, is it? As it used to be. Don't know why I said that. It's never been very good. Yeah, it's a Trappist monastery. One of the Trappist monasteries famed for the amazing beer that the monks all make there as a way of funding the monastery and charity work. Did you know there are 12 Trappist monasteries around the world? 11 of them in Europe. But one of them in Massachusetts.
Oh, that's weird.
Who knew? These ones from St. Sixtus Abbey were very, very angry this week because they found out that a Dutch supermarket chain, Jan Linden, had been buying their beer and selling it on as like hipster craft beer for €9 a bottle, which is 5 times the price that the monks sell it for. So as you can imagine, when the monks found that this beer was for sale on the shelves of the supermarket chain, they were hopping mad.
Oh.
Thank you. The beer is only supposed to be sold by the glass, sometimes by the crate, but certainly not on the shelves of a supermarket for that kind of price. And it's very unclear how the supermarket got it. They've been a little bit cagey about it. They haven't really said, because there are these very strict rules on buying it. Anyway, word had quickly spread that the supermarket had this, and apparently people were starting to queue at branches of Jan Linders to buy it because it's very, very nice beer. They've been doing it for, you know, since the Middle Ages, so they've got pretty good at it. You might see this as a sort of a bad week for the monks, but I really think, given the huge promotion that they've received, it's actually a little bit of a coup for the monks.
Yeah, it's definitely a PR victory for the monks, although I'm not sure they want publicity by the sounds of things. I really like how folksy it is that if you want to order a crate, you have to like set a time with the monks where you'll come to the gates and they'll give you the crate.
And they take your number plate details and stuff as well. It's like very, it's a very awkward way of shopping. I'm not sure I could be bothered.
I am really confused as to how the supermarket chain managed to get these crates. Do you think there's like someone smuggling them out, one of the monks?
Oh, you think it's an inside job?
Well, no, I don't.
That would be super scandalous.
It would be such a good story. Should we do a like Europeans investigation into it?
After your huge journalistic coup with your story about Pizza Express dough balls, I think it's time for us to move on to an even bigger story. So yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Who's it been a bad week for, Dominic?
It's been a bad week for the prime ministers of both Slovenia and Slovakia. They both resigned within hours of each other last week for completely unconnected reasons. I almost wondered whether the resignations were kind of arranged between the two countries or between their tourist boards anyway, as a form of PR, because I've never seen so many tweets and articles about how to learn the differences between the two countries. In all the articles, there's always something about like, Slovenia has wonderful castles and mountains and Slovakia has beautiful beaches.
Those are the wrong way around.
Really?
Yeah, you literally just got it the wrong way around. Because you think about it, Slovenia's by the coast.
Oh,
come on.
I knew this would happen. So I've actually been quite nervous about talking about this because after my the debacle of me talking about time slowing down last week and not being able to describe it, I'm a bit scared of good week, bad week. So yeah, sorry for that mistake and for any more mistakes that are about to come up. But I won't be the only one making mistakes because recently at the World Ice Hockey Championships, they played the Slovenia national anthem for the Slovakian team. And like back at the beginning of this century, Silvio Berlusconi introduced the Prime Minister of Slovenia as the leader of Slovakia. So I'm in good company. I'm not sure Silvio Berlusconi can count as good company. So they are both former communist countries. They have very similar flags, which are basically the colours of the Russian flag with a crest on top of it, but a different crest for both countries. They both border Hungary and Austria, and they both joined the EU in 2004. But Slovakia is very proud of its cheese, and Slovenia is very good at making salt.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Donald Trump's first wife was born in Czechoslovakia, part of which became Slovakia. And Donald Trump's current wife, Melania, was born in Slovenia. So he may actually be one of the only leaders who actually knows the difference between the two countries, although I wouldn't bet on it.
He's the missing link between the two of them.
He sure is. He's the connecting fibres. Now we know a little bit about the difference between the two countries. We are going to look at Slovakia first. Their Prime Minister, Robert Fico, resigned amidst the ongoing scandal following the brutal murder of the journalist Jan Kuciak and his fiancée. We've already mentioned this assassination on this podcast because Jan was in the process of investigating links between the Italian mafia and leading Slovakian politicians when he was assassinated. The fallout from this crisis has been pretty huge, actually, and there have been mass protests across the country, which have continued, actually, even since the Prime Minister resigned. They think he's still pulling the strings. If you haven't read the story that Jan was writing when he was killed, do go and read it. It's been translated into English on Politico, and it's a good way of fighting this awful murder.
One of the interesting things that struck me is that, like, it's not just the murder that's pushing people onto the streets. It's what Jan wrote. Beyond the grave, his journalism is having this kind of impact. It could potentially bring down a government. So that's Slovakia.
In Slovenia, Miro Cerar, the prime minister there, has resigned, and that resignation is going to lead to slightly earlier elections. They were going to happen in June, and now they're going to bring them forward a few weeks to May. He resigned for a very different reason. He resigned due to a ruling from a top court which annulled the result of a referendum on a new railway project. The court ruled that the referendum campaign was one-sided and that public resources and funds were only used for one side of the argument. Two very different reasons for resignation, but a coincidental synchronization between the two often confused countries, just maybe to troll those of us who were already confused.
Busy week in Europe. What about the spy poisoning, huh?
I know. It's really horrible and I don't know where it's going to go. But I was particularly sad to see the British Council has been shut down in Russia because I've got experience working for them as a 12-year-old.
Oh, that's child labour.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it's totally legal, I think.
Well, what were you doing?
I did the Siberian premiere of Benjamin Britten's opera, The Turn of the Screw.
It's quite niche.
It is quite niche. My biggest memory from that is that after the premiere, we got taken to the smartest restaurant in Siberia for dinner, which at 8:30, seven female strippers and one male stripper came out. And it opened with a Kate Bush impersonator stripping to Wuthering Heights. Pretty soon, my father decided it was time for us to leave. And it was like, it was a pretty bad age for that to happen, you know, just kind of hitting puberty, feeling really embarrassed about that kind of thing.
I don't know what you're talking about. This sounds like great family-friendly entertainment to me. Should we do the interviewee bit?
Yeah. I'm really sad I don't get to speak to her.
Yeah, you kind of missed out, Dominic. So I'm not a fashionable person, as we have talked about previously on this podcast, but I do work with reporters who are fashion journalists. They're all said, Susie Menger, she's a legend. She's 74 now, but she has been writing about fashion for literally half a century. And apparently designers live in fear of a bad review from her. And she's just kind of an institution, you know. She's always there at fashion weeks. Kate Moss once described her as being like a mad auntie. When I spoke to her, I was worried about having this kind of Devil Wears Prada experience, where she'd be this terrifying person, but she was actually lovely. You might recognise photos of Susie because she has a pretty iconic hairstyle. She's got a fringe that just goes straight upwards and defies gravity. But she says actually she does it out of practicality. Everyone's always wondered, like, why does she have this hairstyle? What does it mean? But she says she just doesn't like working with her hair in her face. I've got a fringe. Do you think I should try that out, the same thing?
Yeah, I think you should, and post it on Instagram and we'll see what people think, whether you should stick with it. I mean, maybe it works better for a 74-year-old woman compared to...
No, but she's always had it.
Oh.
It's like her thing, a bit like David Bowie having the lightning on his face.
I'm just Googling it now. It is extraordinary.
She actually trained as a dressmaker herself in Paris and still spends a huge amount of time here. And she knew Givenchy, Hubert de Givenchy, brilliant fashion designer who sadly passed away this week after this very long and influential career at the age of 91. He designed all kinds of beautiful things. He worked for Audrey Hepburn. He dressed Jackie Kennedy, Grace Kelly, Marlene Dietrich, all these amazing stars of that era, the 50s and 60s. And most famously, of course, he designed the little black dress that Audrey Hepburn wears in Breakfast at Tiffany's. And he'd really helped to invent this whole idea of less is more, really simple but beautifully made clothes back in the 50s and 60s, which I think 50 years on, you can still look at them and think, that looks amazing, that's really beautiful. I had a great chat with Susie about Givenchy and fashion in Europe in general, and I started by asking her what Givenchy was actually like in person.
Looking at Hubert Givenchy and the fact that he was called Le Grand Hubert, feel that he was very remote. He was somebody who looked down, perhaps on his clients, but certainly on the rest of the world. But, you know, he wasn't like that at all. It was quite the opposite. He was a very warm person. He gave social events that he obviously enjoyed. He wasn't tortured either, or if he was, he never showed it. You know, we hear about tortured artists and tortured fashion people, but he definitely wasn't one of them.
For people who maybe aren't so knowledgeable about fashion like myself, and maybe Dominic, can you give us an idea of what it was about Givenchy that made him one of the greats?
Well, I suppose it's because it is the fussy era that started the 19th century, then came into something much simpler with Coco Chanel, and he really continued in that sort of vein. There was a simplicity, and he was really the first person, can you believe this, to do separates for women. Before that, it had always been clothes that go in one piece, in other words, a dress. But he really invented the idea of putting different pieces that would match. It's certainly true that it is the end of something with Hubert Givenchy. There are a few more out there who were trained as, I suppose you'd say, couturiers rather than fashion designers. He hadn't been designing since the late 1980s, when when the company was sold to LVMH, the great huge powerhouse of fashion. But let me tell you this. He told me that every single day he sat down with a cup of coffee to draw clothes because he somehow wanted to stay in the spirit. And presumably he had done that for the 20 years that he had stopped actually being a couturier.
Yeah, I saw a video that you posted on Instagram. I think it probably would have been the last time you met him. He would have been 91. And it was a video of him sketching dresses, and he was still churning out these drawings of these really beautiful, elegant dresses. It was really lovely.
Great thing about Hubert Givenchy was that he took decoration and so on off the clothes. Of course, that wonderful little black dress of Audrey Hepburn's was a lace dress, so in some ways it had a very decorative surface. But in other ways, it was very, very simple. And you've got to realise, this is coming out in the 50s, even before my time, when he really showed things that were not with all the fuss that we saw in so many of the clothes in that era. I mean, if there were any contest as to who did the little lace dress, perhaps he and Coco Chanel would be fighting for it. But certainly because of the film and because of all he did with Audrey Hepburn, I think his clothes were better known by the general public than many other designers before him. It is extraordinary how a beautifully cut dress can look so simple, but if you look at it close up, it's quite complicated. The detail and where the seams went, or when there were no seams and they were all cut on the bias, you know, it was really an illusion. He was the great master, the king of illusion, in making things that looked simple but were actually beautifully and extraordinarily made.
Hubert retired in 1995, and he passed the baton on to other designers at the label, including Jean Galliano, Alexander McQueen, and now Claire Waite Keller's in charge. Can you still see something of his spirit in the clothes that you'll see at a Givenchy show today?
Other designers have changed what Givenchy's idea was, which was really to serve women. And I don't think you can say that really about, say, Alexander McQueen. You certainly could say it about the present incumbent, Claire Waite Keller, who clearly is a woman herself and is interested in making clothes that are, you know, a modern look for modern women. But the whole of the couture world has changed so much. Apart from Chanel, where I suppose you could say that Karl Lagerfeld still keeps this kind of balance between clothes for clients and clothes to shock or surprise or to write about. But on the whole, that whole couture world has very much decreased. It's down to one or two, three companies now. So I think that if Hubert Givenchy had continued right into his 90s to design, he probably wouldn't have felt very comfortable with the world of fashion today.
I read a review that you wrote of a much more recent Givenchy collection. It was spring 2018, where you wrote that the men's clothes looked English and the women's outfits looked French. You spend a lot of time in both cities when you're not jetting all over the world with your glamorous job. Is there really a difference between French style and British style?
French style, because it is really a style which takes things off rather than adds to it. I mean, I rather, being English, rather love the English way of putting on lots of things, of mixing checks and flowers and just having something that is appealing, attractive, and dramatic. But the French are inclined to think of simplicity as the greatest success story. And that's all about the cut, and it's about the fabric, it's about the material. But these lines are not nearly so strong as they used to be. Everything is global now. To make a success in fashion today, you've got to be successful across the world. And Hubert Givenchy was one of the ones who started that. He had a great success with America. And so I think in that way as well, he was ahead of the trend.
When Givenchy turned up and started designing in the 50s and 60s, Paris was really the capital of the fashion world, with designers like him, Coco Chanel, Yves Saint Laurent. Is Paris still the capital of the fashion world in your eyes? Or are you looking somewhere else, like New York or Milan or even somewhere else?
Wherever you come from, the summit of what you want to achieve in the fashion world is to show and be a success in Paris. I really do think that's true, although I much love going to Milan and other places in Italy where they make such wonderful things. And I love British fashion because it's so energetic, it's so young, it's so fresh. But there's no doubt that it is true that if you want to succeed, if you want to get to the pinnacle, you want to be a success in Paris.
Is there anywhere else that you've got your eye on at the moment as having a particularly interesting fashion scene in Europe?
I think one of the great things about the digital world is that it has enabled people from right across Europe to take an interest in fashion. You know, you can even do fashion courses now from home over the internet. And that means that countries that we've never thought of looking at before, Poland, for example, or the northern European countries, are very much now able to show themselves and what they do.
So this is a European podcast. Do you think there's such a thing as European style? And do you reckon you could spot a European on the street as opposed to an American?
I love the idea of a European style. I don't know whether it really exists. Certainly, I would say that the American nation in general, not the fashionable ones, are much more sloppy in the way they dress than the way that others dress across Europe. But European style, I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's knowing how to wear a raincoat and looking good in it. If you live in the south of France, perhaps it's wearing very little and looking good in it.
Did you know, Dominic, that I was dressed up as Audrey Hepburn one of the first times we met?
I don't remember that.
Do you remember meeting me?
Yes, I do remember meeting you. We were in Duncan's room.
Shout out to Duncan.
H staircase. And we were sitting on a bed with Vicky Raymond and Erica Shields.
Oh, I think I do remember that.
And you were talking to Vicky about how you were going to be Eurasian buddies.
And we remain friends to this day. And it literally is only because we're both half Asian. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
It's not. It's for other reasons as well, but whatever. I remember that as well, actually. You were wearing a very colourful jumper.
Really?
Yeah. I got confused. I thought the first time we met was at that fancy dress thing at uni where we all had to dress up as like a film character or something. And I came as Audrey Hepburn because it's a very cheap and easy costume. You just wear a black dress and get a cigarette holder.
Oh, I do remember that look, actually.
Yeah, like a sort of Vietnamese Audrey Hepburn.
And you wore pearls.
They weren't real.
Who did I come dressed as?
Who's your favourite Hollywood figure?
Aladdin.
Did you come as Aladdin? That's problematic.
No, I don't think I did. Aladdin was my favourite character as a child, though.
He is awesome. You're going to look nice in that little waistcoat as well.
Thank you.
Anyway, should we do your lovely happy ending?
Let's do a happy ending, yeah. So this week's happy ending goes to Finland, who have been awarded the position of the happiest country in the world,
yay,
according to the UN's yearly ranking. So Nordic countries made up the other top four countries, and it's a pretty incredible turnaround for the last European country to suffer a naturally existing famine, which was Finland 150 years ago. Finland is the country that is least corrupt, most socially progressive, and they have the most trusted police force and the most stable banking system.
Sounds great.
However, as we know from last week's interview with Jennifer Pettersson about failings for children in the Dutch system, which is the country that topped the happiest children ranking the last time it was done, these rankings don't necessarily always get it right. So I now look at these tables with a very cynical eye.
There's a few problems with the things that they include, like the fact that they include obesity as a thing that contributes to sadness. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you can be fat and happy. Just look at Santa.
Yes, I just listened to This American Lives episode about fat positivity.
Yeah.
From about a year ago. I'm really behind. It's really beautiful. You should listen to it if you haven't already.
But in general, it's nice to see Finland doing so well. We only have a very small sample size on this podcast. We've spoken to one Finnish person, the Olympic curler, Una Kalsta, but she was very happy. So that seems like conclusive proof.
She was happy despite the fact that Finland isn't very good at curling.
Don't say that.
No, she said that.
Oh, I thought you meant the whole team.
No, she said that Finland wasn't a very good country for curling compared to some of the other Nordic countries.
That's true.
But she was still happy despite that. So that's like the biggest goal, to be happy even if you don't always win.
Yeah, that is nice. A nice outlook. Well done, Finland. The thing that I thought was really interesting is that Finland doesn't have like the highest GDP per capita in the area, but they're still the happiest. So, like, it's not like it's even the richest country in the region. It's just they get a lot of bang for their buck.
That's really nice. It's not just about money. Money doesn't buy you happiness.
But it does help.
Next week, hopefully I'll have more time to join an interview. In fact, we already know one of our guests next week, don't we? It's very exciting.
We do. Should we tell people who it is?
No.
All we'll tell you is he's got a Michelin star and it involves pizza.
And he's in a new Netflix series.
Don't tell everyone!
Oh, sorry, too much.
Yes, it's going to be a fun week. So we look forward to seeing you all then. If you would like to do something very kind and generous in the meantime, you could leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find the show. We've had some really incredibly kind ones so far, but our egos do still need massaging. So go on, hit 5 stars. You know you want to.
And I get to vote in the Dutch local elections for the first time this week.
Have you decided how you're voting?
I think so. There are like a million parties to choose from. One of which is the Pirate Party, who have put up posters of the leader of the party completely butt naked all around the city. I was on the tram and I just suddenly saw a penis.
Oh, wow.
On a poster next to the tram stop. And I was like, what? And it's the leader of the party.
So they didn't even try to like hide his modesty with like a little election paper or something.
Nope, it just is. He's completely naked and it says, "We've got nothing to hide."
Wow, that's some ballsy campaigning, if you don't mind the pun.
Oh, I don't think it would happen in many other European cities.
Has it won your vote?
No, and they are unlikely to even get a seat in Amsterdam, I think. So
it shouldn't matter, but can I ask, is he good looking or not?
Yeah, he's relatively good looking, but he's not like got a model body that you think, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, do send us any pictures of naked campaign posters that you've seen around your corner of Europe. We'd love to see them. And also, this is a bit of a local radio thing to do, pictures of your breakfasts. We've had a couple of people tweeting pictures of their breakfasts around Europe. You guys are some seriously good cooks. I'm so impressed.
Talking of breakfast, I'm really hungry. I'm going to go and cook myself some scrambled eggs.
All right, enjoy. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our lovely guest Susie Menkes. Do follow us on our various socials. We're on Twitter at EuropeansPod, Instagram at EuropeansPodcast, and we've been having more fun with our Facebook page lately and posting interesting stuff from around Europe there, so hit follow over there.
Yeah, it's really taken off. The algorithms are working in our favour all of a sudden.
May the algorithms be forever in your favour. Facebook.com/EuropeansPodcast.
Thank you to Jim Barn, our wonderful jingle factory man. He's currently working up a new jingle for Good Week Bad Week, and I have power of veto and have vetoed it because it's too embarrassing for me.
It features that lovely bit of singing that Dominic did the other day. I think it's lovely. I think we should use it, frankly.
Which I was fine hearing one week, but if I have to listen to that every week, then it'll make me sad. So
I mean, I can sing as well. Why don't I just sing one?
Why don't you? I just posted something on our Facebook about a school where people sing. Where all the kids sing and it makes them happier, so maybe we should sing more.
Singing is good for the soul. I wonder if that was included in the happiness ranking.
It should be.
That's it for another week from these two badly dressed Europeans. We'll see you next week.
Speak for yourself.
Bye!
Bye.